This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation pop experience. Welcome to Pop Goes to the Couch, the WandaVision reviews. We're on episode 4. This was quite the episode entitled, what was it called again, Scott? I forgot.
We interrupt this program.
We interrupt this program. That's right. I have the memory of a goldfish sometimes. I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Atherton, and thank you for joining us tonight. We are here, and we're going to break this down like we usually do, and there's a lot to unpack, and I really love this episode because this is my favorite kind of, some of my favorite kind of storytelling as an amateur screenwriter, when you kind of show it from a different perspective. All the stuff you knew, and then things get turned on its ear, and all other new stuff happens. But enough of it with me talking. Let's get the rest of the guys in here and start the show. Let's first get in. Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Hey, good evening, Andy. A doozy of an episode to talk about tonight, and I feel like we're finally starting to get a little bit of payoff from the first 3 episodes we saw, so I look forward to talking about this.
Yeah, it was kind of a curveball, because everybody was expecting, you know, to move forward into another decade, and really we got kind of an explanation of what we've been seeing so far. Yep. All right, so also joining us is Scott Shifley. Hey, Scott.
Andy, I am so happy to be here and for us to talk about this episode. It was amazing. It gave us a lot more questions, gave us some answers, and it showed a world where we saw normal people come back from the blip and not superheroes, and that looked amazing.
Yes, the opening, this is probably some of my favorite MCU stuff ever, was the beginning of this episode. But also joining us is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Hey, and it's great to be talking WandaVision here on the Place to Be Nation pop experience. And after this episode, we were experienced in more ways than one.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were. The good kind, too. All right. So the first thing about this episode that we're going to talk about as we go through it is Wanda is actually not the main character, the central character of this episode. It's actually Monica Rambeau. And the show, it starts off with, she's a cloud of human dust swirling around while lines of dialogue from Captain Marvel were playing in the audio track. The dust coalesces into her shape, and we see that she's sitting in a chair next to a hospital bed. Suddenly aware, she notices that no one is on the bed, rushes into the hall where people are coalescing in the same way she did, left and right, all the sides of her. Anyone who has closely or even half closely followed the cinematic universe can tell what's going on. It's the reversal of Thanos' finger snap at the end of Avengers Endgame. The unblippening has arrived. So, there's a little more to unpack. Hold on. We find out that she's been tending to her ailing mother, who is Maria Rambeau, Captain Marvel's old pal, that when she got blipped in the intervening 5 years, Maria had died. So, Sean, what do you think of this scene? This was, like I said, this is some of my favorite MCU scenes of all time.
One word for me, it's incredible. She came back, and then you find out, you find out, people come back. When she came back, she thought nothing had happened. She thought she was in the same place, same time. I love the carryover from the Thanos snap here. What it does is it links this show back to the Avengers movie, which I absolutely loved. I like that her mom, we find out, had died from cancer. So she found that out. So I don't think you could have opened this show any better. And this is kind of giving you, we're going to start seeing this from, we want to call it Geraldine, but Monica. We're going to start seeing Monica's point of view from this. And I thought it was fantastic. Just great, great, you know, throwback to the Avengers. And all I can say is that this opening shook me a little bit. It was so great.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw a little bit in Spider-Man Homecoming. We saw like the basketball thing with the band, I think. Yes. And you know, and then Peter rambled basically to Tony at the end during the battle at Endgame, kind of saying, we're there. But we hadn't really seen the reversal of the snap, really, from like just an ordinary, and
I wasn't sure what was happening at the start, and then when I figured it out, I'm like, holy shit, that's how great it was.
Yes, yes. Scott, what'd you think of this opening scene?
Just to echo you guys' statements, like Sean said, holy shit. When it started, I rewound it because I was confused. I was like, did I miss something? But it was just her coming back to life. And she even mentioned, she's like, did I fall asleep for 20 minutes? So these people had no idea what was going on. And as you said, Andy, seeing it from like a normal person's point of view was just amazing because it was just in a hospital and it was just chaos. So, of course, with my warped mind, I was like, what if you were flying on a plane and you disappeared and they thought you were dead? And then they snap you back and then you're still up in the air and you just fall to your death. That's terrifying.
Yeah, people had been talking about that.
That's awful.
Bring the podcast down. All right. Tim, what did you think of the opening scene?
Speaking of bringing the podcast down. No, similar to Sean, I wasn't sure exactly what I was looking at first. I thought initially that this was some kind of immediate follow-up from what we'd seen in the last episode of Geraldine / Monica being ejected from the universe of WandaVision. But then when you're like, oh wait, this is a throwback to the unsnapping where everyone reintegrates essentially. And it conveyed so much so efficiently that, number one, Monica was a person who had been snapped, that this mass extinction event, as suddenly as it happened, was just as suddenly undone, and just communicating the human cost of that, the human tragedy, the toll of this is someone who is basically seeing her mother through a life-saving surgery, and because she happened to be one of the unfortunate victims of what Thanos perpetrated, she lost 5 years and has rematerialized. In the course of those 5 years, her mother just perished, as we all will, just that human mortality. And just to think, like, the lost time, that her mother Maria, like, she had this surgery and then had another however many years that she had, but without her daughter, which is the last thing I'm sure she's expecting, going in to have this procedure done. So it got across so much in such a limited amount of time, and I was just like really, really shook after this opening scene. I would agree that it's up there with some of the best scenes that the MCU has given us.
Yeah. You know what's funny is too, I have it playing in the background right now. Do you think she was asleep when it happened? So she probably had, because the people,
quite
like,
possible.
Well, yeah, because if you think back to the movies, like when Peter, I don't feel well, Mr. Stark, that whole iconic scene. So, yeah, she had to have been asleep when it happened because she said, oh, I must have fallen asleep, and she didn't remember. Like the rest of them know they died. It seemed like
had
she
some
didn't.
Awareness, yeah.
Yes,
that they,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of whatever happened to them, whether it's.
And to add on to it, Andy, I thought it was crazy and / great how she was walking through the hospital and you could see people literally just coming back.
Yeah.
Like you would look in a room and you see someone like standing over a bed, or like she almost walked into someone just coming back. So like, just imagine how crazy the blip was when it happened, but imagine like, with 5 years later with it coming back, and like, it's just amazing. Like, you wonder what people have missed, how people have moved on and everything. It's just sad. It's heartbreaking, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and one thing that this episode did also was kind of establish where WandaVision is in the whole MCU timeline. So it's approximately 3 weeks after Endgame is really what we're learning, and that it's was it like 6 or 8 months before Spider-Man Far From Home. So that kind of tells us where things are going on. So we cut to SWORD headquarters, where we get the first on-screen unpacking of the acronym Sentient Weapon Observation and Response Division, and where we meet the acting director of the operation, Tyler Hayward. He and Monica go way back, and through their chat, we learned that Monica had been the director until her death and had built the whole place up from scratch. We have that scene where she goes in with her ID badge and it doesn't work, and the security guard's kind of an asshole. You know, that, you know, well, if it worked, you would, if it worked here, it'd work. I think he got his pink slip the next day. If I had anything to do with it.
Yeah, did he not get the memo that half the world's population just rematerialized?
Hayward tells Monica that, that Sword had dialed back with the astronaut missions that she used to participate in. Now they're focusing on robotics, nanotech, and AI. As Monica notes, they're not so much observing and responding to sending weapons as they are building them. So, Scott, what do you think of Monica's return to work and the introduction of Hayward to the story?
I thought it was great. And actually, it was her mom. They said her mom was the one that built it up, and he took over when her mom died. But it's nice to see that Monica had, like, you know, she was already part of this. She wasn't thrust into it. And it shows that she's actually a bigwig, and it actually shows a sword. But the only issue I had is, if this has been around the whole time, like, why haven't we heard about it until now? I would have liked it better if it was something new that was created in the 5 years between 2018 and 2023, between the blip, as they had to deal with Thanos, because that makes it look bad with, like, if they're supposed to not deal with, like, you know, sentient humans. They took a pretty big L when the first Avengers happened, and New York was literally crawling with them. So, but it's nice to see another group instead of, like, a government group besides S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Tim and Sean could probably shed some light of when Sword actually enters the picture. Perspective.
But Tim, of course, is next. But I have maybe Tim will have the same thing I'm going to say.
I'd rather you go next, actually, because I don't know that I have the same perspective.
I sort of had
the same question, as a matter of fact.
To answer the question, so you said that's the last Spider-Man movie takes place how long after the Avengers movie?
I think we're about 7 or 8 months.
Okay, so this takes place 3 weeks after, right?
After Endgame, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you remember, so the Spider-Man movie, the after credit scene is where we see Fury and the Skrull with Sword, right? The whole space station Sword, right?
Yes. Correct?
Did they establish that was actually Sword, though?
I think they did, and if that's the case,
assumed it was Sword.
Right, there was the assumption.
But maybe it is Sword, and the reason why they renamed it for this is because this will turn into what Fury has it as 8 months from now.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? Where they switch it?
Yes.
Maybe that's kind of where I was going with it.
To Scott's point, it does sound like there is a longer history with Maria having established this organization, and, you know, why haven't they done a better job, or why haven't we seen them up to this point? Maybe it was just we don't know exactly how long they've been around. Perhaps they were formed really just shortly before the events of the first Avengers film, or maybe like right afterwards. That's still a pretty good chunk of time. I mean, we feel like that movie wasn't that long ago, but in universe, it kind of was. Keep in mind, we've had a 5 year time jump in here baked into the narrative. So I feel like whenever they started this organization, Sword, they perhaps did not have the resources of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it took them a while to get to the point where we see them now here in this movie. That's sort of my personal headcanon of making sense of this.
But at this point in time, Nick Fury, he's still with S.H.I.E.L.D. right now at this point.
As far as we know. Yeah.
As far as we know.
I did like this little scene because it could have felt like an info dump. There's a lot of exposition we get here, but they did a good job of not making that feel so ham-fisted. Just with Monica's introduction and getting across that her mom started this, and this guy, what's his name, Tyler Hayward, I believe, is now taking it over. And Monica used to do, like, off-world missions, it seems like. Maybe she was an astronaut in some capacity. So, I mean, that's a lot to throw at the viewer. And could have been done really inelegantly, but they did a nice job here.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, after what you've been saying, that maybe it's a response. It was built as a response after the first Avengers movie. Maybe that's where they
perhaps so. It gained maybe more credibility after the first Avengers film. I don't know. I just think that There's probably a good reason we haven't seen that much of them. They haven't had a lot of visibility, and it's just maybe a question of resources and purpose, you know?
Yeah, another question that long term they're probably going to answer for us, I'm sure. So
I hope so, because, like, you know, Monica's mom, because we know that Captain Marvel set in the 90s, so that's why I think it was created, because after they had, like, the Skrull and the Kree dust up, you know. So I was thinking maybe it was created after that, and it, you guys may be right, it got more budgeting after the events of Avengers. They might have not taken it as a serious threat.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll get explored. If not in this show, maybe in future shows as well.
Well, we know Fury has a show coming up of his own, so, and I think you're right, Tim. I'm pretty sure they said it was S.W.O.R.D., but I could be totally wrong, so who knows?
Yeah, I think everybody just assumed.
I'd have to
go back and check that, you know, that post credit scene out, and kind of, I'm sure there's a breakdown somewhere on YouTube of it if eagle eyed nerds have spotted it. But Tim, you have anything to add about her return to S.W.O.R.D. and introduction of Tyler Hayward?
No, not so much. I thought that they did a nice job of giving us Monica's history and setting up the characters that we're going to be spending some time with here. Part of me does wonder if we're going to see this Tyler Hayward character with some kind of ulterior motive. He's presented.
Yeah, I don't trust him.
Yeah, I mean, he's presented as kind of benevolent, but we know how these things work, right? Like, they tend to not smile upon authority figures so much in this universe, and especially those that have a history with our hero. So I don't know. I had some suspicions there regarding his character.
It's interesting, Sean? You say that, because I watched. So I my wife and I, one of the shows we watched together is Law and Order SVU. And last week, he was the main villain on SVU. He was a lawyer that was coercing his legal students into having sex with him. So, to your point, maybe it is – he is not in the very – I remember he was not great in that episode. So, maybe there's a correlation with SVU and what we're going to see here. So, that's the first thing I thought of. So,
we know he can play a villain,
We know he can play a villain, yes. So, maybe you're onto something there, Tim. It's very coincidental.
That's one of my daughter's – that's probably my daughter's favorite show. She probably would have popped big time.
Tell her to watch WandaVision and then go watch SVU and see what –
I'll have to ask her about that, because she would have been like, "Dad, he was on."
It popped in my head right away. I'm like, "Holy shit, that's the guy that was on SVU," you know.
Or she calls it Dun Dun. All right, so Tyler tells Monica that per her own mom's protocol, she is no longer allowed to act as an astronaut. I guess she wanted to prevent mysteriously disappearing individuals from returning and fulfilling sinister missions, but there is a missing persons case in New Jersey that has the FBI in a tizzy, and that S.W.O.R.D. wants her to chaperone a drone for their search efforts. Skeptical, Monica follows orders and drives to the quaint Jersey town of Westview. At the city limits near the beat-up sign we saw at the end of the last episode, she meets her FBI contact, who is Jimmy Woo, last seen in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He tells her that he had someone in witness protection in Westview, but something went wrong. Long story short, although you can see the town's houses and buildings from a distance, it has otherwise been erased from reality, with all of its 3,892 residents no longer even remembered by their own loved ones. He said he knows he should investigate, but somehow feels this implacable fear and revulsion. He can simply tell that nobody's supposed to go in, because they have these two cops sitting there, basically they're saying they're from Eastview, literally sitting at the border. Nevertheless, Monica deploys a drone, which looks exactly like the toy helicopter from episode 2. It goes through some kind of weird force field that looks like close-up pixels on an old TV screen, disappears. Against Jimmy's urging, Monica walks up to the field, puts her hand through it, and gets sucked right in. So, Tim, Monica gets kind of, I don't know, pushed to the side to help investigate this FBI thing. Mm-hmm. We learned that we could see Westview, but obviously it's people. There's something weird going on, and the drone goes in, which, you know, most people recognize, and then she goes in. And what do you think of this part?
couple of things here. I liked at first, just from a character's perspective, that Monica scoffed at being assigned to this missing persons case, essentially. Like, she sort of thinks it's beneath her because she's got bigger fish to fry here in S.W.O.R.D. But her mother, even in absentia, has kind of set up these protocols. And you sort of get the impression that it's because she wants to, I don't know, somehow continue to protect her daughter in the event that she returned. Like, you know, you come back after 5 years of being cosmic dust, essentially, and the first thing that happens is you die on an away mission. Like, I can sort of see the logic in her mother, like, saying, well, if she does come back, then I want her basically on the ground for a while still.
Yeah, it's like a cop getting put to desk duty.
Yeah, pretty much same analogy there. So, as much as this series has been a love letter to the format of the American sitcom, this is where it starts to feel more like maybe an episode of The X-Files, where you're not sure what's going on here with this setup. It's like this case of almost mass amnesia that is going on, where no one is even aware of this town that exists called Westview, even while we're standing in front of the sign for it. And, you know, these local cops saying, we're from Eastview. Like, it felt very much like a Monster of the Week episode of X-Files to me. Just the way that so many episodes started off like that. And it's funny that you mention how Jimmy Woo is kind of repulsed or repelled by the energy field that's been created, this warp in reality, whatever we want to call it, that is, you know, given us WandaVision, whereas Monica seems quite drawn to it. You think that this seems awfully irresponsible for this high ranking, like, intelligence agency operative to approach this strange energy field and to, like, touch it with her bare hands. But watching that back, I sort of got the sense that she was attracted to it in like an otherworldly kind of way, that she was almost compelled to want to enter it and interact with it. Mm-hmm. And there might be something to that. I don't know, based on what I think the origin, like the entire premise behind WandaVision, what I think that is, and how that maybe connects to Monica's headspace right now. Of course, we get confirmation to some questions answered that, number one, yes, this is a real town that exists somewhere that something has happened to. Number two, that the helicopter, the toy helicopter we saw, is in fact a drone that was deployed by Monica. So I know some folks were thinking, is that like an actual, was that a real helicopter that got sucked into this world? Well, no, but not far off. It was a drone, and that drone got repurposed to conform to its new environment. It doesn't look exactly the same in the world of WandaVision. It now looks like a toy helicopter, but not all that far off from its original appearance. So it kind of answers that question. So we're getting confirmation on some things here, making progress.
Yeah, and Jimmy Woo has learned a card trick also. Sean, what do you think of this part of the episode where Monica gets kind of pushed off to New Jersey and we get Jimmy Woo reintroduced and something's going on? Like Tim says, very X-File-ish.
Yeah, very X-Files. A lot of reveals here in a short amount of time. So from the start to now, it was good to see Woo had learned a card trick that from Ant-Man. So that was kind of a cool little twist when he flipped out his business card. The two local cops have been clueless to what's happening. And I like what Tim talked about with Monica being drawn almost to it, because she didn't hesitate to walk up to it, whereas Jimmy was kind of hesitant. But she walked right up to it, put her hand up to it, really didn't hesitate, didn't really pause or anything. So it's a good point. Was she drawn to it, which could be something to do with her history with S.W.O.R.D., that she's used to these kind of things or whatever. But I really quite enjoyed it, and they divulged a lot here. So going back to the first few episodes, you know, how did she get there as Geraldine? The helicopter, I'm one of the ones that said that helicopter, I thought maybe that's a real-life helicopter, and somehow it got drawn into this, too. And this is And this is her perception of what that copter was, but no, it really was a drone. So, yeah, good stuff here. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Scott?
Talked about it, Andy, but I loved how we saw that Jimmy Woo did the card trick that he had been practicing in Ant-Man and Wasp. That was a nice little character progression. And you guys brought up a good point. It definitely felt like a weird monster of the week because the cops were right in front of the Westview sign. And they're like, we told the G-Man here, there's no such thing as Westview. We're from Eastview. And it's very creepy and ominous. It's like, how can you not see these towns and buildings and literally right behind you? And they don't, but then they go up and like, they put the drone in the air, which I agree with you guys. I thought maybe they put like a helicopter in, and that's how Monica got into the town, quote unquote. But we find out that's a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He only had 5 years to learn a trick, I guess.
That's true.
All right. So we get a little scene, a little text comes up. This is 24 hours have passed and we're inside an armored truck. We have four scientists sitting in the back. Turns out one of them is astrophysicist, now Dr. Darcy Lewis, played by Kat Dennings, returning from the Thor. Last time I think we saw her was in Thor The Dark World. It seems like, she had changed, went from being an intern to a doctor in that amount of time. She and the scientists, that she goes around introducing, she puts together that they don't really know what's going on. And they're being brought in from all these different disciplines. They find themselves in a massive militarized interagency staging area at the city limits of Westview inside one of the makeshift buildings. Darcy converses with a humanless agent, notices on a device that there are enormous amounts of cosmic microwave background radiation, aka CMBR. She sees an old physioscope on the ground and turns out sees the vague outlines of Wanda in her 1950s garb. She immediately declares that she needs a TV, an old one, like not flat. So, Sean, we get the return of Darcy, and we kind of see, them trying to make heads or tails now of what's going on.
So, it is good to add one more woman to my Pop Goes to the Couch train. So, Darcy will now join that train. So, now we have Wanda and Darcy on there, along with the LaRusso and all the rest of them. So, it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving this show, Andy. So, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, so I've always been a fan of Kat Dennings. I love Darcy. It's not just that I think Darcy's hot, but Darcy's attitude is great. I love it when she's questioning the scientists and she's just looking at them like they're a bunch of idiots and basically tells one of them, oh, good for you. I don't really care, which I thought was hilarious. she catches on. And here's where we find out that what's happening in Westview, we're all thinking this is some concoction or something that, maybe he's playing out in the mind or whatever, but this is legit happening. There's a sitcom going on in real life in this freaking town, and they can watch it on this TV, and it's crazy, right? So everything is happening. Everything we've seen in the last three episodes, it's legit happening. It's not in the mind. It's like legit happening, and it's really playing out as a TV sitcom, which – again, kind of blew my mind a little bit. So big revelations on this show.
Yeah. We kind of start to have Jimmy and Darcy basically act as the audience. Like, they're asking all the questions. They're kind of responding how we would where we've been responding as we've watched the first three episodes.
And I love the dynamic. I think those two have a really good chemistry that I look forward to playing out too. I really enjoy their
scene together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Scott, what'd you think?
It was nice to see her back. As Sean said, she's easy on the eyes. But I did like how she's like, look at all these organizations together. I hope we get a commemorative shirt. So she's like, being the wisecracking person we saw in Thor, which is good because everyone's so serious in the show. It's nice to have some comedic relief. But she proves her worth instantly because she sees all the radiation and finds the sitcoms that we've been seeing that we thought were taking place in Wanda's mind. But as we find out, these bit players are actually real people.
Yep. Tim, what do you think of the bringing back of Darcy and her getting herself in the thick of what's going on here?
Interesting. You use the word thick there in connection with Darcy. No, I am.
Don't do that. Keep moving on.
I am a Hey, it's not a bad thing. I am a fan of the Darcy character for sure. And I really appreciate being able to see her just not like under the thumb of a Jane Foster, who was like not a great character in any of her appearances.
Amen.
Perhaps that will change. Perhaps that will change in subsequent films. But Darcy sort of stole the show in her previous appearances. So to step out on her own, pretty nice to see. And yeah, this is where, for all the criticisms that people may have had that, oh, WandaVision isn't really about anything. It's just kind of this cutesy show where they're revisiting sitcom tropes, but what is really happening? This is like where the plot kicks in. You know, this is like, you could say the show has now started, you know, four episodes in. I think that's more of a feature than a bug, quite personally. But yeah, as you said, Andy, we have these scientists, particularly Darcy, and you have FBI agent, the returning Jimmy Woo, serving as the audience surrogates, asking the same questions that we are and kind of reaching the same conclusions and bafflement along the way. I also love that, as Sean was saying, WandaVision, as we've encountered up to this point, is not just, it's not just the way it's being presented to us, it's how the other characters are perceiving it as well, playing out exactly the way that we are seeing. So it makes you question, what are we not seeing? What are they not seeing? And we get some answers to that question as this episode progresses. So it has that, that extra meta layer that I enjoy so very much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, we are having, this is like a love fest. I mean, we've loved the first three episodes, but this just takes all, takes, basically, we were given three meals, and they basically took those three meals and made this, like, incredible meal from all three of them.
Like
and
served great it to show us. Within a show, really.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, layers and layers. So, continuing on, we see a sword guy in a hazmat suit crawling into a sewer pipe so he can enter the town. We immediately realize he must be the beekeeper who emerged from the manhole in episode two. Tyler is here now talking to Jimmy while they look at various screens that have been brought in to look at what's going on. It appears that the CMBR is forming a signal that displays the TV shows of Wanda and Vision that we've been watching so far. So you're saying, you know, Jimmy asked Darcy, so you're saying that the universe created a sitcom starring two Avengers, and she responds, it's a working theory. After a montage that implies a lot of research, we learn that all the characters on the sitcom are being played by people from Westview. That is, except for Geraldine, a.k.a. Monica, whom Darcy sees on the screen, prompting everyone to freak out. After some, you know, a lot of science talk, they decide to attempt to contact the TV well by broadcasting a radio signal inside the world of the show. And somehow someone shows Jimmy a photo of the drone on the show, which is in color against the black and white backdrop, and he says to go with the production design or render useless, Darcy adds. So Scott, we get Darcy setting up and kind of figuring out what's going on. We learn what's really the how the beekeeper came about, and how you know, Jimmy is really probably the Jimmy and Darcy are the only ones that really are figuring out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, what the hell's going on? These people are supposed to be geniuses, and there's only like 2 out of 200 people figuring this out. It's like they could send us in there, and we've been able to figure it out better than most of these jabronis. So, what I did like, though, was them, you see them doing homework on all the bit players that they had. Like, you go back to the first episode, and you see the hearts, and you see that, you know, they're actually these people, but they're able to figure out everyone except for, they didn't show this on the show, so I'm going to assume they haven't figured out except for Agnes and Dottie. They haven't said who those people really are yet, so that's got to be stuff we got to look out for, especially with what we think what's happening with Agnes's husband that we don't see. I did like you saw, like, remember the end of the first episode, you saw someone with a sword take notes on the TV show. That's actually seen in this episode, and it's great. And just them seeing Monica, it shows how quick this is going. But something that was brought up that was interesting was that Darcy found so much radiation, it was like when the Earth was created. So there's something big going on here if it's giving off that much radiation. And also it sounds pretty dangerous to people because they said, oh, the radiation isn't dangerous. And she said, not yet. So I think we might see – I think that was an important line that may pay dividends in the future episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps we're on the verge of a creation event introduce some – a universe of characters, so to speak. Tim, what do you think of so we get the answer a question about the beekeeper, and we're starting to see Jimmy and Darcy really it's ridiculous, but they're buying it. So what do you think of this part?
Yeah, it is suggestive of a new world, a new universe, perhaps a pocket universe. In a primitive state of creation, makes me wonder, is this world growing? Is it expanding? Much in the way that the world we know expanded through, the Big Bang, as it were. Something to keep an eye on for sure. We get some more questions answered. The scientist becoming a beekeeper, well, he's not an AIM henchman, as Sean and I were kind of speculating and perhaps hoping. So I think that was just maybe a red herring, just the fact that he became a beekeeper and we're thinking who looks like beekeepers in the Marvel Universe. Well, people who are well-versed in the deep cuts are thinking the AIM goons, but I think that was maybe sometimes Easter eggs are just that. They're just there for kind of visual flair and don't amount to anything plot-wise, and that's just fine. Although, it does tell us that when people enter this world, they do conform to its environment, both physically and, I would assume, mentally as well. So it's a quite disorientating experience when you enter the WandaVision bubble. We know that these townspeople are they map to real actual people who are, as far as we know, alive. So it sort of puts a pin in that theory or idea that I had coming out of our last episode, that everyone that we are meeting, with the exception of Wanda and Geraldine, are dead. Although I don't know, something could have happened maybe prior to or through process of creating this world, that maybe they are dead, but they did have lives and identities prior to whatever has happened to them now. Very telling that Agnes and Dottie apparently cannot be readily identified, at least so far. So still furthering those mysteries.
Yeah, and Darcy has a great line here. She's like, I know it's been a crazy few years on this planet, but he's dead, right? Just making sure. Sean, what do you think of this part of the episode?
So Scott brought up the radiation stuff, and I had to laugh momentarily because on the next episode of Shrink Wrap that Tim and I are on with Jenny, we do the limited series of Scarlet Witch and Vision. And one of the things we talk about is Wanda's supposed brother, Nuklo. But I highly doubt Nuklo will be on this show, but he had me popping when he's been missing the radiation, but I doubt he'll be on this show. But anyway, the beekeeper thing was a great reveal. To Tim's point, we thought it was AIM. Obviously, we were wrong. Monica just slipping into the Geraldine role is interesting. Darcy popped big time, even to the point where she was excited when Geraldine actually had a speaking part, which was funny. If we go back to the radio, I think I said that, hey, Wanda, who's doing this to you? I think we called it out that it was Jimmy Woo. Back in episode 2. So, and then like Scott said, when they were taking notes on the, I believe that was Darcy that ended up being the one taking the notes through the TV that we saw, right? Mm-hmm. On the back end of that one episode. So I think it ended up being Darcy. So again, just continue to reveal some things, which I really, really enjoyed. I like when they put everybody up on the whiteboard, and Jimmy Woo's whiteboard's hilarious. He's writing all these theories down on his whiteboard, which is, like, to your guys' point, the same things we would be asking as we watch this show. So I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the driver's license going up and like you guys said, we don't see Dottie. We don't see Agnes. Ralph isn't even brought up. So obviously Ralph is not someone in play that anybody here even knows about, except for maybe Monica, who I'm sure in passing heard the name Ralph, but has never seen the guy. So I wonder how that's going to play out. So, yeah, a lot of questions answered, but a lot of questions still left to play out here over the next 5 episodes.
Yeah. All right. The show has moved on to the 1960s setup from episode 2. And the team, that's Sword and FBI, try to speak into the radio from Wanda's meeting with Dottie at the pool. We hear Jimmy saying what we heard come from in the radio in that episode. But instead of seeing Dottie freak out and crush the glass in her hand, the show seems to just skip to everything being fine and goes right to the Hydra Watch commercial. They then see the beekeeper situation from that episode as well. Again, the weirdest part of the scene skips over and they're suddenly at the happy ending. Soon they're watching the 1970s episode where Wanda is giving birth. Another skip of the weird part with Geraldine prompting Darcy to speculate someone is censoring the broadcast. An alarm goes off. The boundary, a voice in the PA says has been breached. So, you know, we're watching along and kind of showing stuff that maybe we hadn't from our, that we haven't seen, because we're getting a different perspective. And, you know, again, they popped also for, the fact that, that what's her face has Geraldine has a, line, you know, she's got a speaking part this week. It was a lot of fun. So, Tim, what did you think of the edits and the fact that we're now seeing some things from the other point of views as we go on?
Yeah, so we know that we've seen some edits, mm-hmm. and it kind of took us out of the experience, as we've talked about on previous episodes. But these edits are not experienced by the Sword scientist and the folks who are watching this as a sitcom, essentially. They noticed that there's some weirdness that took place. It seemed like something was missing, but they didn't see what was edited out like we did. So we are privy to a little bit more information than these guys are. And I thought that was a pretty cool touch. Like that a lot. But yeah, definitely made me speculate as to who is causing that, who's behind it. Did these commercials, which we know that the scientists in the real world are seeing as well, did that give them pause? You know, just like all the references to Hydra. We've had Hydra soak, we had the Hydra watch, of course. Like, did they pick up on these little clues, these little details, or is that something that has escaped their notice thus far and that we're going to circle back to? Made me wonder, because we sure caught those things, and you'd think that these guys, as savvy and, you know, inhabiting this world, would pick up on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Darcy drops her cup of noodles that she had made, and that scene, you know, I have it up on the screen right now, that's not something we've seen. We didn't see that scene of you know, Wanda and Agnes meeting outside a store and Geraldine sitting on a bench in front of them.
Yes. So it suggests that, like, there are more episodes of WandaVision, so to speak, that exist as just kind of the way that they're presented. So we're getting a selective view. We're seeing select episodes of this that I imagine play out like full season episodes of this sitcom series that these scientists are just quietly watching as they eat their cup noodles.
It's like they're watching marathons on Nick at Night.
Yeah.
These old
yeah.
shows.
We're just seeing the important bits, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sean, what do you think of this part?
Yeah, the skipping is interesting to your point. We saw it on our watch, but they're not seeing it on their watch outside in the real world. So I'm curious to what plays out with that. I do believe Darcy makes a comment about the commercials, but something about it, but she almost passed them off like they weren't important, which I thought was weird. I don't know if you guys caught that or not.
Right.
So that was a little strange. I thought, I was like, oh, how is she passing off? Like, these commercials are actually in this town. It's so, again, I still have so many questions about how this is playing out. And, mm-hmm. The thing for me is it Wanda? So I think we, in our heads, we kind of know where this is going, but is Wanda really in control of this? Is she the one that's doing all these edits on the outside people are seeing, or is there something else going on? So, again, more questions answered, but, again, more questions I have.
Yeah. And Darcy has that that line where she says, you know, so she washes dishes once per episode, barf. So how many episodes really have they been seen? You know,
yeah, that's kind of exactly.
23 in a whole season.
Well, back then they
old
had
school
longer seasons.
32.
Oh my goodness.
Back then, yeah.
Yep. Scott, what do you think of this part of the episode?
It just seeing Geraldine. Well, you know, Monica, Geraldine, and in a scene we haven't seen, like, it opens up more, and, like, what have we or haven't seen? The skit part, you know, because, full disclosure, before we started doing, like, any of these podcasts, I wasn't thinking of, you know, there being, like, a quote-unquote higher power with this, but with them only not seeing what we've seen with the edits, that definitely, you know, thinks that someone's only showing those people what they want to, what they can see. They're not showing, like, you know, what happened to Monica or what happened with the beekeeper or the breaking of the glass. So it's definitely interesting because I don't think that Wanda would be in control of that because she does. I don't think she really knows what's going on. So, yeah. You know, I'm starting to turn as we get farther into the season that there may be someone who's letting Wanda do what she wants up until a certain point. Definitely with something that happens later in the episode.
Yeah. There's a lot going on that we don't know exactly. We know Wanda is controlling some things, but is she controlling everything? That's like a good question we all have. So then we go inside the show for the first time this episode. You know, the aspect ratio changes. We're revisiting what we saw at the end of the last one. You're not my neighbor. You're definitely not my friend. Wanda tells Monica, you are a stranger, an outsider, and now you're trespassing here, and I want you to leave. So her hands get red and magical. She fires a blast that sends Monica through the wall and outside, then into the force field. She goes through four walls, by our count. Maybe she broke the fourth wall.
Wanda, oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I did see a YouTube video, so I'm not taking full credit for that. I'm just sharing the information. Wanda looks perturbed and uses her powers to reconstruct the house, then goes back to the twins in their cradle. Vision walks in and asks where Geraldine is. We cut to Monica on the grass in the real world that we saw at the end of the last episode. We then see Vision looks dead in one of the terrifying scenes images we've seen in all the movies so far, with his head caved in where Thanos destroyed the Mind Stone in Infinity War. But then he looks fine again. So he says, we don't have to stay here. We can go wherever we want. Vision intones, no, we can't. Wanda replies, this is our home. Are you sure? Oh, don't worry, darling. She says, I have everything under control. So Sean, you know, we finally go back to what we've been seeing, and we see how, you know, Monica ends up outside of, you know, Westview, and, you know, that kind of chilling vision of a vision, pardon my your use of the word, but what do you think of this part?
Wanda was truly scary here. Like, her whole demeanor, her attitude, like, it was just like pure evil there. And her firing up the hex bolts, I assume that's what she fired, was that red, was that what we call her hex bolts, and then just sending, you know, Geraldine, Monica, just flying through everything. I like your fourth wall analogy. That was really, really well done, even if it was a YouTube video. But yeah, she was brutal, and she just didn't care, and she was evil. And then that Vision scene haunted. I mean, that shook me, man. When the Vision, like, dead Vision, even though we know he's a robot, was still pretty, it was hard to see. It was like, all right, this woman has definitely lost her freaking mind, and it's further confirmation that, yes, indeed, Vision is still dead. So, I really think this is where we peel back the layer a little bit and truly see that Wanda is suffering and truly having some kind of breakdown here, which I think we all knew, but this really, like, puts it out there for you. This is just a really uncomfortable couple scenes here.
Yep. Scott? What'd you think?
I'm going to start with the Vision scene, just basically echoing what Sean said. It was terrifying because you're not expecting it, and he's 100% dead from where that stone got ripped out by Thanos. And, you know, with her saying we can't go anywhere, it proves that, you know, she is, like I said before, she is creating this in her head, but there's, like, someone editing her, and that's pretty scary. They might have said, you know, you can have this little town as yours. Like, you know, let me manipulate you. And, you know, she doesn't realize there's a manipulation going on because she has, you know, her own twins, like how she was a twin, and you know, she has, you know, Vision back alive, and I'm actually watching it as well, and that scene just popped up, and it's terrifying even the second or third time that I've seen it, because it, yeah, but she is scary, and I definitely feel we're getting House of M Wanda right now with
definitely
the way
had
her,
that vibe for sure.
With the way her grief is going, and she's just trying to hold on to the one person that, you know, loved her, and that was Vision.
Tim?
Wow. Yeah. So first of all, the fact that more confirmation, for starters, that Wanda was the person who ejected Geraldine / Monica from this world. And in a way that was extremely violent and quite honestly should have killed her. And it made me think that this is not like a material environment. Like there, it's not substantive. The way that she blasted her through like four walls, like the impact of that should kill a human being. And it doesn't, because those walls aren't really real, right? So there is no real impact to that other than her, you know, wiping out on the ground when she's back in reality. So yeah, like that tells us why Monica is no worse for wear, really, when we catch up with her. She's not as injured as we would think a person should be after that sort of experience. But zombie washed out corpse Vision is fucking chilling. I totally agree with that. And now it raises as many answers as we're getting. We're also having questions raised at the same time. Is Vision's body actually a part of this? Like, is that being literally reanimated, or is it just sort of a subconscious reminder to Wanda and to the viewers, of course, that Vision is quite dead? But yeah, it's just such a haunting visual seeing that, especially the juxtaposition of that, which is so, like, it would be consistent with a big screen cinematic Marvel Universe movie, as we saw in Infinity War, not out of place in that sort of context, but here, set against this very, like, idyllic, suburban storybook fantasy backdrop of the world, the sitcom world of WandaVision, how out of place that is what made it so terrifying to me, but made it so much more effective at the same time. It does give me some pause and cause for concern that is this really just the story of Wanda losing her shit and having a nervous breakdown, which is consistent with her comics character history. I just hope there's more depth to it, because there's a part of me that kind of hates the hysterical woman who can't control her powers kind of story that comics have done over and over and over again. And it's just, you know, kind of like bad optics, I feel like. So I hope, and I sort of still trust that there's more to it than that.
Yeah. And we have some great lines from Darcy through this, where she's talking about why they keep, you know, switching decades. Is it just for my enjoyment? And also, you know, they see the scene where you know, Geraldine mentions Ultron, and they notice that that's the first time that, you know, our universe has been mentioned on the show or referenced on the show. So again, they're us basically, because all of us, when we watched an episode, we all probably did like holy shit, she broke character basically. So getting to the end of the episode, we see Monica outside saying it's Wanda, it's all Wanda. We go back into the show again, and she picks up a baby and says, what should we watch tonight? Vision looks slightly upset and confused, but keeps it together and smiles in his robot face. But there's some subtle, you know, little, you know, glances or nods that he's been suspecting something's not exactly right here. They sit on the couch while Jimi Hendrix Voodoo Child wails. They watch some TV and the credits roll. I know, like I mentioned in our chat, you marks probably all pop for that.
Hollywood Hulk Hogan to walk out.
Mm-hmm. I was.
Fucking strumming his air guitar.
I like how you called us marks.
Yes. Well, I popped too, but I'm the moderator, so I get to say that shit.
Yo, Scott. You're gonna say Vision is alive, even though you know he ain't,
brother. Let me tell you something. So, Scott, what do you think of the end here with kind of Monica, telling everybody it's Wanda, and Vision not getting a little uneasy or whatever that is of Vision, and the end of the episode.
Well, definitely with Rambo telling her that, telling everyone it's Wanda, because she's seen it from her point of view, because she basically birthed these kids within like a 12-hour span from what we've learned last episode. And she basically kicks her out of her perfect little neighborhood. You have no home here, you're not a friend of mine, and like poofs her out. And then we've seen hints of Vision starting to get it, because he brought it up in episode 2 and she rewound the tape. And he made him say something else. So she's pulling all the strings. She's the director. She's the script writer. They're supposed to say what she wants to say. And when they don't, she either expels them like she did with Monica, or she just rewinds the tape when there's something you're not supposed to do. Like Sean said earlier, I was hoping this was like a whole drop like Cobra Kai after this, because I just wanted to go to the next episode. And I know I said this the past couple episodes, but I'm pissed off. I got to wait till Friday to watch the next episode because it was so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then where we left with weeks of nothing to talk about. So
that's true. That is true.
It's like, you got to it's balance. So, Tim, what do you think of the ending of this episode?
Again, just kind of getting back to my earlier point that we get a very declarative statement by Monica that it's Wanda. It's all Wanda, which feels like kind of a pivot point for, I hate that term, for this series. And still makes me think we're only 4 episodes in. It's the MCU. There has to be a twist. And it's where I start to feel some kind of way about the premise, about what's been presented, where I'm like, yeah, it is Wanda. Yes, she's in a state of grieving, but I still think they're on multiple levels. There has to be more to it. And yes, she has created this environment. She's created this world. But I think someone, if they're not directing events, they are capitalizing on this somehow, and they want this to happen and want it to be sustained, where yes, it is Wanda, but it's not just Wanda. And that's where I've been kind of focusing my thoughts and energies still going forward. I know Sean has his theory, and I don't know that I even disagree with that necessarily, but I still think there is a person behind the curtain in some form or fashion.
Yep. Sean?
So she made it very clear. It's Monica. It's all my, I love the ending. I love the voodoo child thing. I was so unexpected. So I thought that was great. But, Darcy's saying it's been Monica. It's Wanda. It's always been Wanda. But, here's the other thing. You broke the fourth wall thing. I'm going to say every TV show has a director. And she might be in control of this, but I'm with Tim. There's someone I still have my ongoing theory of who's behind it. And she is in control to a point, but I still think there's someone pulling the puppet strings, or someone has infiltrated this world that she's created around her and is manipulating her within from somehow. There's still more to this story. At least I certainly hope so. Cause like Tim said, I don't want it to be the typical, can't handle their powers and lose it and go crazy. I've seen that enough times. They did it with Dark Phoenix. I don't need to see it here with Wanda. So I'm hoping there's more to the story, which with 5 episodes in, more to go, I'm sure there is.
Hell, they did it with Wanda in the comics.
And they did it with times. Wanda. Yeah, exactly. But I wanted
multiple times.
But, yeah, but Dark over Phoenix is probably the most famous one, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. I kind of give that one a pass.
Because it's the first of its kind, really.
That's yeah, cool. Well, it's also Chris Claremont who...
Correct.
Chef's kiss.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, we could go off. That could be another podcast in and of itself.
Jesus.
So I was just looking up some other notes, and it seems like Kevin Feige responded to a question regarding everyone reappearing from the original blip. For example, if people were in midair during the blip, that they would just fall when they came back.
To their death.
He has since responded saying that Professor Hulk would account for that and make sure that each person returned safely. This would account for somebody rematerializing in a safe environment and not dropping from the sky or exactly where they were standing, sitting. Each person seems to return just out of everyone's way, more or less. So
I kind of agree with that. It also makes me think that for folks who would have been placed in mortal peril had they just rematerialized where they vanished in the first place, that there's like some kind of queue, some kind of holding an intermediary between life and death, where it's like, well, we can't put you back on that submarine you were on, or that cruise ship, or that airplane, or that car you were driving at 80 miles an hour. So you're going to get in line while we figure out where exactly to place you back into reality.
It's like purgatory.
Tip your waitress, basically.
basically, they're all on the island from Lost.
It really makes me think there must be some kind of, and that's a very Professor Hulk thing to do, to place people in a queue.
Yeah.
He's like systems manager, systems administrator kind of thing.
So this episode ends. What are we going to see in the next episode? Everybody assumed this one was going to be the one in the 80s. We've seen the shots of Catherine Hahn, you know, with the 80s hair and the leg warmers and the aerobics outfit. So, Tim, what do you think we're going to see in the next episode? We believe we're going to be in the 80s, but like, what could learn? What could, because now, you know, there's a distinct change. What one character has been expelled. So,
yeah.
There's no inside man, so to speak, from the people that are playing our parts.
You know, I almost think I do think that we're going to enter the 80s in the next episode, and I think in our last show I sort of predicted we would see more of the outside world and be more of like a 50-50 split, which we didn't get here in episode 4 of WandaVision. We got mostly the outside world, but maybe my prediction, while not exactly accurate, would just be a little bit delayed, where we are going to see more of a split show between WandaVision, the sitcom, and WandaVision proper, the MCU television series. And we will be entering the 80s. I think the sort of the obvious riff would be Full House, just because of, I mean, it's a sitcom.
It's easy.
It's the very suburban setup that we're used to, with the family and the Olsen connection.
Yeah, I was about to say, you took the words out of my mouth on that, Tim.
I hope it's not that, because Full House is such a dumb baby show.
Ugh.
And I don't ever want to see any reference to it ever, because it sucks. And I just hope we're drawing from better sitcoms than that. But I do sort of think that that's the obvious just go to, which, I mean, it's whatever. As far as Geraldine being ejected, I would like to see that handled as like a cast change within, you know, within the sitcom, where you just swap out one character for another. And it's like, they're almost the same character, just played by a different person. Like they fulfill the same role within the universe of the show. And maybe
the two Darrens from Bewitched.
Yeah, kind of. Or maybe we just get a new Geraldine, or a Geraldine-esque character. But it doesn't work the same way. It sort of makes the show worse. Like, I'd love to see them play around with just the concept of that. Again, just on that meta level, because I drop trowel for anything meta. It's just one of those buttons that they can push for me, and it always works. So I'd love to see some exploration of that, just the way that shows, not just the conventions within these shows themselves, but some of the behind the scenes production elements that that are inherent to the format. Also,
yeah, I feel like we're gonna get more of a growing pains That's what I was getting, and that kind
I'd
of
be
stuff.
Fine. Yeah, I'd be fine.
Because, well, Full House to me is more of a 90s sitcom, even though it did debut in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I consider it more 90s, because that's when TGIF took off.
I kind of agree. Yeah.
So, and I assume we're getting a 90s episode and so on and so forth. Sean, what do you see coming in the next episode?
Like Tim said, I think we're going into the 80s. I think we'll see, obviously, the kids progressing, I would assume. I'm curious how fast they progress based on how fast she gave birth. So I'm curious where that leads. I want to learn more about Agnes and Dottie at this point, because I think they're playing into a lot of the theories that some of us are thinking through. That kind of like leads to my theory where maybe some people have gotten into this Wanda universe that she's blind to. But at the same time, if I look at the last episode, Herb was talking to Agnes and she was just begging him not to say anything. So that throws me off a little bit, because I'm not sure where Herb had a driver's license. Agnes does not. So I'm not sure that dynamic, since they know each other. And it was very clear. They're like, no, she was like, no, 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 don't tell her. So that was interesting to me. So I'm curious about that one. I also think we'll see more of the outside world. Obviously, I think we're going to see more of a split at this point. You might see one episode where it's more Wanda and Vision. You might see one episode that's more the outside world, but I think they're going to start merging together at this point to build up to probably what's going to be a freaking batshit crazy finale.
Could we get an episode where we see the backstory on Agnes or Dottie? You know, could it be like...
Well, I'm very curious. I want to see that, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Like an episode like this, but we see it from their perspective, you know, something... Yes.
Like that whole Dottie scene where the glass broke, there's a story to that, and I really want to know that.
Like you know, having maybe Agnes, like, okay, I've got to lead her this way, like, seeing her, like, prepare. Kind of like, you know, I don't know, I assume you guys have all seen Wild Things, the movie, how they kind of showed how... I know, forget Rosemary's Baby for this episode, we're comparing it to Wild Things, but...
you're right, maybe Agnes is, like, the one that leads her the path that... Mm-hmm. So maybe she's the producer or the director, and her husband Ralph is the show owner, and she's there to lead her where he wants her. I just have all these different theories running through my head.
I think that Agnes and Dottie are in competition, both as sort of competing socialites within the world of WandaVision, and that there's an exterior element to that also.
Do you think it's like an angel and devil type thing? Like, but we don't know which one is which yet. I would go towards Dottie being the devil.
Dottie, maybe a little bit, because Dottie's like, Wanda, there's something with you. Like, there was something about her. That's probably a good analogy, Scott. You could go there too. So it's interesting to think about.
But if Wanda wants to perpetuate this world that she's created, she would cast Dottie in more of an antagonistic light, even if, you know, Dottie is someone from the outside world who's trying to end this and trying to rein Wanda in, pull her back into reality, then she would be the villain within this world that's been created.
I think Dottie is Bova.
the Wild Things comparison I was getting to was
that
in the credits, in the end credits, we see actually how things were pulled off and how things were set in motion that we didn't see. So I'm thinking maybe we get an episode like that of Agnes or Dottie, where we kind of see Agnes, like, you know, grab the pineapple and like, okay, I gotta go now. Now I gotta get her to the pool club. Like, kind of seeing like how Agnes has to, like, what she has to do. Like, because we haven't really seen we've seen Dottie, you know, in the one episode for the children, and then she was in one scene in the previous episode. So, Scott, what do you think we could see in the next episode?
I think we get the Halloween episode, because we've already seen them trick-or-treating. I think that's going to be in the 80s. I also hope we get, like, Vision in, like, a Miami Vice-type suit, just to make me laugh. But I definitely do
shirts. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like if he gets like a Magnum PI stash, that'd be awesome.
I look like Glenn Gulia from Wedding Singer.
Yeah, that'd be great. sorry.
Summer reruns. Sorry.
Julia Gulia.
Julia Gulia.
What are we doing?
But I definitely think we'll get, you know, it's like a breadcrumb now till the end of the season. The season's only 9 episodes. Next week is episode 5. So we're going to still get some breadcrumbs and also get some answers like we think of Liz. I think we'll be split 75-25 next episode because we've seen bits and pieces of the outside world and we saw it more substantially this episode. And I think we're still going to get some of that because we still got to know what the hell's going on with their back part. It wouldn't surprise me if even Monica got a bigger part as well.
You know, you also wonder how are the townspeople going to respond to the babies? Because as far as we know, Geraldine was the only person other than the doctor to know that Wanda was pregnant. And now all of a sudden they have these children that I can't imagine they won't try to keep secret. So it's sort of like, hey, how did these kids come about? Didn't know you were expecting. And it just how they're going to deal with that is very interesting to me. And once again, you know, you said you'd put aside the Rosemary's Baby references, but by popular demand, we've been told that we need to reference that once per episode. So,
well, I wasn't putting it aside. I was saying we haven't had one yet. So I'm like, well, I'm going to throw a lot of things.
Still think there's an element of that in play still. So
Agnes with the, you know, the Ruth Gordon comparison once again. You had the babies. We're going to take care of the babies now and give them candy on Halloween with the baby.
All right.
I had to contractually get that in.
Yes, I know. I read the fine print. any final thoughts before we call it an episode here that we haven't talked about?
No, I mean, nothing more to add than what we've already discussed. I'm good.
Stunned silence. I'm so impressed by the continual just quality high watermark that the MCU has established. I know I sound like a real fanboy and a homer just gushing over the show, but it's sort of like this is a television series featuring two B-list Avengers characters from the movies that it does not have to be this good, right? For just the studio and the production to take this kind of approach to what is essentially a prestige streaming series and to say that this has to, like, people are going to watch it either way, but it's important that this is good. Like, we want it to be a high quality on par with anything that we've done cinematically and also be incredibly original, which I think this really is, just how genre bending this show has been, and just in keeping with that great tradition of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the films that dabble in different genres as well. They took that same attitude to their television production. And it, again, I just stress it, it doesn't have to be this good. People would watch it anyway. And the fact that it is just a level of care and craft that I think just sets this franchise apart from others. And I think that's what makes it so special. And I know we shouldn't worship at the altar of, like, these corporations and brands and whatever. And sure. But when something's good, it deserves to be recognized and rewarded. Like, if this was just disposable trash, I'd be the first person to say so.
Mm-hmm. Andy, actually, there's something I did want to say. Tim mm-hmm. got my head thinking. I love the storytelling, and I love how they've intersected different characters from different movies from the Marvel Universe. I like how they got Jimmy Woo in. I like how they got Darcy in. I like how they got Monica in. And all these characters were in different Marvel films, and now they have them on this show. And none of those, I believe in none of those other movies, any of these characters were linked in any way, shape, or form to Vision and Wanda. And I love how they've told the story to get them all there. So to Tim's point, it's pretty genius. Marvel continues to knock it out of the park, and their storytelling is unheralded, and they need to get somebody from Marvel to go work for DC. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, honestly, you know. Yes. Call it a copycat. Say, oh, they're just DC is just doing the same thing Marvel does. Fine.
The comics have been doing it for years. Look,
it's going to be that good.
Same characters.
Yeah, just do it. Do the same approach. Who cares? Fuck it. It's going to be good. Good is good. Quality doesn't care.
Yeah.
The only thing I have to say, last thing I have to say, is it's been brought up multiple times, but the opening scene is one of the best scenes in the whole MCU. Not just the television stuff, but the whole movies. Especially as the four of us have been, we've been on the journey since day one, or as close as you can get to day one of the MCU, and seeing that scene was just amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's up there. If we ever do a Mount Rushmore, cheap plug, of Marvel's MCU scenes, TV, movies, otherwise, yeah, that's going to make everybody's list. All right, cool. So that's going to wrap up this episode of Pop Goes the Couch WandaVision. We were talking about We Interrupt This Program. See, I got it right this time. All right, for Sean Kidd, Scott Sheffield, and Tim Cable, I'm Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us on this episode, and we'll check you out next week when it returns with episode 5 of season 1. Take care, everybody.